Hey, Bridge City Church, how y'all doing this morning? Y'all doing good? Awesome. Well, listen, if I haven't had the opportunity to meet you or introduce myself yet, I'm Pastor Nick. I'm the campus pastor here at the White Oak campus of Bridge City Church, and I'm so excited you decided to spend your Sunday morning here with us, worshiping God and praising His name. There's literally no place I'd rather be this side of heaven than right here with you all doing exactly that. And before we continue our series entitled "What's the Point," I'm gonna have a little fun. Can we have fun?
Yeah.
You okay to have fun in church? All right, you can shout it out as long as it's, you know, nice. If you had one thing that you could guess or you would say that I know a lot about, what would it be? God, okay, that's going Bible. That's a good one. Thank you so much, Jeremy. That was so sweet. Anything else?
Bicycling.
Cycling. I love cycling. What was that? The Mon Valley. Turner's Tea. Food. Thanks so much, Nikki, my sister-in-law. Why? Well, that's body shaming, and that is wrong. Good food. There we go. Anything else?
Basketball.
Waitress. Here we go. Growing pains. I know a lot about growing pains. I remember that the summer that I grew like 8 inches and my shins hurt if you looked at them. Now, the one thing about growing pains is it's painful because it's producing results. So, why am I talking about this? Because one of my prayers is that we never see somebody or have somebody feel like there's not room for them. There's more than enough room. As a matter of fact, God is confirming that going to 3 worship experiences was just something He was waiting for us to do, because last Sunday we didn't have just 100 more people than we were averaging 4 weeks ago. We had 160 people more. That's okay. So that's like creating and that's after duplicates are removed. I don't get counted 3 times. Rachel doesn't get counted 3 times. Our worship team doesn't get counted 3 times. We remove duplicates. That means people that are here numerous times, they're duplicated. So being able to say that 160 people were here last week that weren't here 4 weeks ago is pretty amazing. That's like creating a whole new sector of the church. Now, one of the things we did when we went to 3 worship experiences was we grew by a third of the amount of seats that we had. I don't know if you've noticed, I think that some of you have, that we did not multiply the amount of parking spaces, technically. Okay? But here's where I'm at. If you're here and you're a part of the growing pains with us, I'm asking you to rewind all the way back to things that I said 8 weeks ago, 9 weeks ago, 10 weeks ago, that things are going to change and we're going to adapt as we change. Have anybody ever watched Friends before and they're carrying a couch up the stairs and they're like, pivot, pivot. We got to pivot a little bit. There is a parking lot that is behind our building at Aerospace Engineering. We're allowed to use it all weekend. They've been gracious enough to allow us to do that. If you're here and you are a member or a regular attender, just know that that's always available to you. There are people that have started to park in the back alley. Some people double park in the back alley. Those people that know about the back alley should then move on to Aerospace, okay, and open up the back alley for other people. We're going to make as much room as possible. And it is a joy along the way to figure things out with you all. Because that's what family does. That's what family does. We figure things out. And today we're continuing our series entitled, What's the Point? And last week, Pastor Rick and Natalie did a phenomenal job communicating what's the point of marriage. So us following that up with what's the point of family and parenting only makes sense to me. It makes complete sense to me. Now, I know what you may be thinking. I'm not a parent, and my family doesn't come to church. We are described in this room as the family of God, okay? So there's a whole bunch of spiritual moms and spiritual dads in this room. We're surrounded by our brothers and sisters, our cousins or aunts and uncles in the kingdom. So you're a part of family. How do I know this? I'm not just saying that because I'm the pastor. I'm saying that because it'll be 21 years in January that I walked into Bridge City Church for my first time. I walked in a scared, broken, depressed little boy, and I came in because of a girl. I walked in because of a girl. That girl's now my wife. And because of that jump, my life was changed forever. I prayed, and I didn't even know I was praying before I met Jesus that I would have a big family, because I didn't grow up with a big family. Most of my family lived in California, or the family that lived in Pittsburgh didn't talk to each other, and it was just a whole thing. I believed for a bunch of brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles and cousins and grandmas and grandpaps. So this literally became my family. And still is today. Now, some family members have moved away. Some family members have gone to different, you know, family reunions that are held on Sundays. I get it, okay? It happens. But when we have the perspective that we're all part of something, don't check out because we're talking about parenting and family today, because you can be a part of the greatest family that you'll ever be a part of, which is the kingdom of God. Okay, so let's just get that into our minds as we listen to today's message. And as we do listen to today's message, I want you to know that every single one of us plays a part in raising the children that are a part of this church and the generations that are to come. You may be thinking, I'm not a parent yet. I'm a teenager, or I'm a 20-something, and I'm not a parent yet. There is a woman that's a part of our church. She's upstairs with the kids right now. Her name is Donna Colella. She has raised more children in this church than any parent that I've ever met, and she's never had children of her own. Generation after generation after generation after generation, she has poured into. She has encouraged. She has empowered. She has equipped. She has spoken the truth of God over their lives. It doesn't matter if you're a natural parent or a spiritual parent, we all have a point to play in parenting and family. So I think I covered everybody and made sure that nobody mentally checked out. If I do see you falling asleep during the message, you'll be in next week's bulletin. We don't have a bulletin. We will next week. Okay? I know a lot of printers. So what are we fighting for? Let's just first jump to Matthew 7, 24 through 25. Everyone who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock. Everybody in the room, say everyone.
Everyone.
Now say it so the kids up here can hear. Say everyone.
Everyone.
I love that. That's great. Good answer. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and everything that could was hitting up against this house. But it did not fall because it had been founded on the rock. This man, this wise man, built his house on rock, the foundation of which God poured in his life. Verse 26, and everyone, everybody say everyone.
Everyone.
Who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who builds his house on the sand, and the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and beat up against that house, and it fell. And what a great fall it was. We have a choice whether or not we're going to be full of wisdom and knowledge or be foolish. Now, I've made some foolish decisions even after I met Jesus. But thank God the foundation was solidified, and whatever got knocked down could be rebuilt. Now, there's been a lot of foolish decisions that I made before Jesus, and continue to make the same one over and over and over and over and over again. Foolishness will not lead to anything good but destruction. But wisdom will lead to a life that you can build upon, and others can build upon, and others can see the solidity of your life. Why is this important for us to make sure that our family, that our children, that the children that are in our world, not just the world, our world, are encouraged and empowered and equipped? Because family is one of the ways that we represent God to the world. Family is one of the ways that we're able to represent the image of God to the world around us. And when I say the world around us, I mean your neighborhood, your family, your friends, your coworkers, your fellow students, your fellow retirees that you golf with. Family is how we do this. Why is it important for our families to be strong and be built on a solid foundation? Because our culture is at war. Our culture is battling to dismantle families. The enemy is after everything that God created for good to destruct that. How do I know this? Because I just see what teenagers are going through alone. Not even just adults or young, teenagers. I'm from the school. Now, you may say I'm old or whatever. I'm not. I feel better at 40 than I did at 25, so come at me, okay? I'm good. I know my age. I'm full of wisdom. I'm from a generation that still knows what it's like to grow up without cell phones and not to just get electronic mail, to get mail in the mailbox. I'm always also part of the generation now that if you send me something in the mail, I'm most likely not going to open it or get it because you didn't email me, right? Things change. But one of the things that I recognize within our teens and within that generation is there is a war for them. Mentally, emotionally, sexually, they're being inundated with everything that the world has to offer. And how is that happening? All the time. Because of these little computers we carry around in our pocket. Listen, my phone's up here with me. I'm preaching from my iPad. I love electronics. They're great. I'm not talking that electronics are bad. I'm talking about it's an open access to the world to do whatever they want in our children's lives, in our lives. It is. And we need to guard ourselves from these things. Suicide rates are up across the board, not just in teens. Mental health issues are up across the board, not just in teens. Families need to be strengthened again. Parenting needs to be strong again. And we need to recognize that we're not called to just raise adults. Oh, I just want to get my kids to adulthood. No, I want to raise a resilient person. I want Lennon and the children that get raised in Bridge City Church to be full of resiliency. What does that mean? Not rigid, and they don't break every time something bad happens. They're flexible and they're able to understand that when the winds come and the storms happen, that they are not going to break. Resiliency is the goal. So we need to recognize that us being able to create people that have a high capacity and they're able to recover quickly from the things that are going on in their life, they're not just going to break. Why? Because difficulties are going to happen. Storms are going to come. But if we can create a family unit and a culture that is able to adapt quickly to these things, it changes everything. When these traumas that happen, when these stressors happen, or whenever we don't get our way at work or at school or within our family, it doesn't crush us. The point of a family is to create resilient adults, the ability to bend and flex and not break. Our culture is eating away at us and our kids, and the weight of life and culture is becoming a lot for people to bear. Because we're putting it on our own shoulders. You know, I have a lot of pet peeves. If you if you've been around me for any amount of time, you've probably known like he has some pet peeves. I have a new one that was created about 10, 12 years ago. Those stick people that are on the back of people's cars. You know what I'm talking about? I'm an honor student. Good for you. That's great. Yeah, I'm not worried about raising an honor student. I'm worried about raising somebody that's going to honor Jesus his whole life. Put that on a sticker. I have some other new pet peeves. I'll share them in a later preaching. So make sure you come back next week and park at Aerospace. Deuteronomy 6, verses 4 through 5. Everybody scream here.
Here.
This is really fun. Like, the key words in the verses that we read out of Matthew were, you need to hear. You need to take what you hear and make sure that you put it into action and you build your house on a solid foundation. If you hear that and you don't do that, that's foolish. Here again, we're told to listen. O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You know, a lot of times we have things that are in our mind and we understand them intellectually, but they're not in our heart. I will take heart over book smarts every single day of the week. I will take passion and heart over training every single day of the week. A lot of people can be trained and taught how to do things, but you can't recreate heart. I will pick the team that has more heart than the team that has more five-star athletes every single time. And God is reminding us that we need to give our entire heart to him, our passion, our excitement, our fears, our concerns, our worries. We as adults, as parents, as sons, as daughters need to be able to do this. And we need to make sure that those things that are overflowing out of our heart are evident to those around us. Verses 7 through 9, you shall teach them diligently to your children, and you shall talk to them when they sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. If your neighbors found out that you go to church, would they be shocked or would they say, I already knew, but based upon the way you live your life? If your neighbors found out that you're in here on Sundays and throughout the week at connection groups and you're worshiping God and praising his name and being overflowing with joy, if they found out, would they be shocked because that's not what they see Monday through Friday at your house? Are the promises of God and the promises that he's told us that we're going to receive as sons and daughters, are they posted on your doorpost? I'm not talking about going home and getting a sign from Marshall's that says, live, laugh, love. I'm not telling you to do that. Or as for you could put it on the front of your house. As for this house, we will serve the Lord. But let them see that as opposed to reading it on your door. I want people to know what the inside of my house stands for before they make a judgment based on the outside. That's why you'll never see a political sign in my front yard. Ever. You never will. Never will. The only sign you'll ever see in my front yard is join us at church on Easter or politicians are temporary and Wu-Tang's forever. That's the only sign you'll ever see in my... And listen, I told the governor this. I told him that. He's like, listen, man, don't drive past my house. Not that the governor's ever driving past again. Like, the lieutenant governor might. He's from McKeesport. What does your house represent, and do the people that are around your house know? Or is it just something you practice? Are you somebody that has recognized that whenever these blessings start to pour out in your life, that it doesn't just change you, it changes the world around you. It changes your children. It changes your marriage. It changes your family and your friends. And when the Lord your God brings you into the land that he swore to your fathers and to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob to give you with great and good cities, that of which you did not build. God's promises in our lives, in our families, in our neighborhoods, in our communities, in our workplaces will be released when we start to walk out the things that God told us to do in the verses before. Love him with all of our life. You will become influential. You will become an influencer. You will be an influential part of your community and your world when you start walking out the promises of God. Jesus quoted this as the greatest commandment, to love the Lord your God with all your heart and to love your neighbor. Listen, we want our kids to listen. We want our kids to be obedient. We want our kids to be someone that hears us when we speak. I'm going through that with Lennon right now. I'm like, Lennon, I know you hear me. Now I want you to walk out what I said. I didn't hear you, Daddy. Okay, I'll repeat it one more time. If I have to repeat it again, we're gonna talk. But we need, if we want to create hearing kids, we need to become hearing parents. We need to become hearing aunts and uncles, hearing grandmas and grandpaps. Are we listening? Or do we just want everybody around us to hear? And we don't have to be the ones to listen. Without faith, it is impossible to please God. And listen, we receive faith by hearing, by believing, and by obeying. Remember I said the world will take everything and try to make it their own? Remember I told you that? God created everything under the sun. God was the first HBO. Thank you, Chops. That's good. He wanted us to hear, believe, and obey. It wasn't the home box office. If you're going to identify as a Christian and you're going to want the world to recognize you as one, you need to answer the question for yourself, what kind of Christian are you? And you're like, wait a second, what do you mean what type of Christian am I? There's numerous types of Christians. And the first one is a cultural Christian. Are you somebody that you carry the name and you're somewhat a good person and you know that you're blessed because of the things that are going on in your life and therefore you're a Christian and you come to church 2 to 4 times a year? Christmas and Easter are like definitely, that's definitely happening. Mother's Day and Father's Day, maybe. But we'll sneak in another one throughout the summer maybe, possibly, if I'm not camping. And then we have the congregational Christians, the ones that say a prayer at Thanksgiving dinner. They go to church 1 out of 4 Sundays, but only whenever it's convenient for them. Whenever it's convenient for me, whenever I can squeeze God into my calendar, I'll be there. Whenever it works into my schedule, whenever my kids want to go, I'll go. You know how many times I hear that, oh, my kids just don't want to come to church. That's why I'm here by myself. I don't want anybody to force anybody, but there's been a lot of times Lennon hasn't wanted to go places. And I'm not just talking about church. I'm talking about, hey, Lennon, we got to go to dinner. We got to go meet somebody. I don't want to go to dinner. Well, that's a shame. That's a shame. Get in the car. I don't want to get in the car. You're going to get in the car. Either you get in on your own accord or you're getting in the car. Right? We talked about this during our second worship experience that we had child dedications. And recognizing that you're the parent, your children aren't, is a game changer. You're the boss. And you're following the real boss. The one who gave his life on the cross for you. Third type of Christian. Christ is the center of your life. You're a Christ-centered Christian. You love God with all your heart, all your mind, all your strength, all your soul. God is not an option or an add-on to our lives. You're committed wholeheartedly to the things of God and his kingdom and seeing him use you to see it grow. God is where you get life from. Loving God with your whole heart. And when we love Jesus, we honor what he says. We do what he says. Psalm 92, verse 13, they are planted in the house of the Lord, and they will flourish in the courts of our God. I want nothing more than for the children of Bridge City Church and those who are yet to be here to flourish in the presence of God. I want them to flourish. I want all of us as moms and dads and brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles to flourish when we're all together. But you got to get planted in order for that to happen. My wife loves gardening as long as a lot of dirt is not involved. There's bugs and stuff, babe. There's bugs. I get it. Now, Rachel has planted some things that have flourished. We've planted things together that have flourished. done great. I'm not talking about our jalapeno tree that gave us 2 jalapenos last year. That's not one of the ones that flourished. Not talking about the hydrangea bush that is currently dead in our front yard that was planted last spring, but I'm told it'll come back. You just got to leave it alone. Is that true, anyone? Okay. If things are planted and they're not replanted over and over and over again, their rate of success and growth are way more in the positive. If things have enough room to grow, if those plants don't have to be ripped up and repotted and different types of soil and different things going on, those plants last and they grow into everything that God's created them to be fruitful. We had a tomato plant. It got all the sun in the world. We needed to put stakes up. We needed to put cages up to keep it from going different ways. And it was very fruitful. I think last week and a half we just stopped getting tomatoes. You are the same way, and the same is true for your family. If you grow roots into a God-fearing, Bible-preaching church, you will grow. You will become fruitful. But you'll also have some times where pruning takes place and it hurts. And that's your choice whether or not you're going to jump ship or you're going to allow for your roots to continue to grow deep. Rob's been a part of the church for 35 plus years. He and his wife have deep, deep roots in this church. Generational roots. Their grandkids are now serving. They're sitting next to Sue right now. They go to a different church, but we're not a rival gang. We're all serving the same God here, okay? So they're serving in church. That's generational things. You don't think that Rob and Sue would have had a possibility to rip their planted family up and go to a different community or leave or get angry and stop going to church altogether? No, they fought through. So what isn't optional in your life? It is not something that Rachel and I are ever going to do is just rip up the roots that we've grown over the last 20 years. That's not even an option. But what isn't optional for your family? I'll tell you right now that church is on my calendar. Like, yeah, that's because you're the pastor. No, that started decades ago. It is on my calendar and it ends never. You know, you could select repeat. It is not optional. If you've ever been a part of a team and they say practice is optional, guess what? It's not even optional. That's just because they can't start practicing yet till a certain time of the year. But if you keep missing practices over and over and over and over and over again, guess what? You're not a part of the team anymore. If your kids continue to go to school and say, hey, my parents said homework is optional. I know you assigned it to me, but it's optional for me. What do you think your teachers would say? You'd have a quick parent-teacher conference, real quick. So you have to decide for your family and for your children and for those closest to you, what is not optional in your house? Is church only something that happens whenever it's convenient, or is it something that's not optional? Listen, we're not trying to create normal people. I know what normal looks like, and normal is scary. I want to create some abnormal people that are different than the world, because what are we? We're the ecclesia. We're the group of called out ones. I don't want to be normal. I've never been normal my whole life. I'm done chasing normal and the Joneses. I'm not going to keep up with them anymore. But there's a pressure of culture on our kids that they're missing out if they don't have this, or they're missing out if they don't have this, or they're missing out if they don't have this. Listen, you know the odds of your child becoming an NBA, NFL, MLB, or whatever other NASCAR driver are slim? But the odds of your kids becoming a God-fearing, church-serving, God-loving adult, that's going to happen, or it's not. It's a 50-50 shot. Love, joy, and peace in our lives go beyond all circumstances. Listen, we all know what we want to see in our kids' lives, that they're going to be mature, successful people making biblical decisions based on wisdom. So decide what you want your kids to be, and you become that person for them now. If you're not somebody that serving's not important, or going to church isn't important, participating in your community isn't important, how do we expect for our children to become that? If you're not somebody that's modeling what generosity looks like in your family and for your kids, how can we expect that they're going to one day just become that? Don't expect your kids to get or to do anything without it being modeled for them. Mark 7, verse 6, Jesus replied, "You hypocrites, Isaiah was right when he prophesied about you and when he wrote, 'These people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me.'" Don't just give God lip service. Don't just tell him what you think he wants to hear. Live it out. Our families depend upon it. Because there's two kingdoms at war here. God's kingdom and the world's kingdom. And I want to be with the one that's spoken that we're going to be full of wisdom if we follow him, and foolish if we go the other way. I am not somebody that wants us to be a church or a people or a group of parents that I want us to raise victors, not victims. I want us to raise young men and young women that are victorious and confident in who they are and who they were created to be. Are we looking to our perfect Father in heaven for everything that we need and desire? You know, I'm in full agreement that in our culture today, we risk too little and we rescue way too quickly. How many of you have ever seen a helicopter? Okay. How many of you have ever seen a helicopter parent? Never going to let their kid get hurt. Never going to let their kid figure it out on their own. They always right in. I grew up in a generation, you drank from the hose outside and you didn't wear a helmet when you rode your bike. I turned out okay. Now, wait. Do not ride your bike without a helmet. I ride my bike with a helmet now and I yell at anybody who doesn't, because I would be eating through a straw if I didn't have my helmet on. Okay? So, wear your helmet. But you could drink out of the hose. Go ahead. You're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. But let's let our kids fail a little bit. Let's let them figure out who they are. Pastor Rick, I'll never forget when he gave me the keys to the church. I was sitting at his desk. And I was like, "Hey, I got a lot of meetings this week. I'm leading this. I'm leading that. I need keys for the church." And he said, "Here you go." He reached over to his briefcase, grabbed his keys and gave them to me. I was like, "Well, how are you going to get in?" He's like, "I don't have to anymore. I'm going to tell him to call you. I don't have keys." He's like, "When somebody calls me at 2 a.m. and said, 'Hey, the lights are on at the church,' or 'The water broke,' or 'This or that,' I'll just call Nick. He has keys. I don't." He let me drive the car. You know how many times I wrecked the car? A lot of times. I wrecked the car a lot. I got dings, dents, flat tires. I never blew the engine up. But I've been through some stuff. We need to let our kids learn. I wish I had a video right now of Lennon sending it up a half pipe on his bike and Rachel going, "Ah!" And the video stopping. He landed it. He said, "Oh, I'm not doing that again." He learned. Don't send it up that part of the half pipe. We're going to start landing the plane. Galatians 6, verse 7, "Do not be deceived. God is not to be mocked, for whatever a man sows, he will also reap. Sowing and reaping teaches us to have a healthy fear of God." May we raise a generation and be a generation that represents what it looks like to live in a healthy fear of God. and we continue to sow with a generational mindset, and may we continue to reap that reward. May we understand that we're called to not just focus on behavior modification in our lives or even our children's lives or our brothers and sisters' lives. We're called to focus on the hearts of the people that are around us. Focus on your heart. You know, I can't force Lennon to love God. You can't force your kids to love God. You can't force your family members to love God or your brothers or sisters or your neighbors or anyone around. You can't force anyone to do anything. But you can continue to stack experiences on top of each other that point to a living God. Experiences that point people to hope and experiences that point people to a life that is overflowing with his peace and his presence. If we continue to point out experiences and create experiences and help people experience a living God, the likelihood of them growing spiritually is astronomical. People can debate your doctrine, your beliefs, the Word of God. They can debate all of that. They can't debate a changed and transformed life. They can't debate you once were this and now you're this. They can't debate that you were raised like this, but you're raising your kids like this. They can't debate the joy that's present in your life and the peace that's there when we rely on Him. I'm never going to force anybody to respond to this next question, but I pray that through our experience thus far today that you have a desire to answer the question for yourself. Do you belong? Do you believe? And are you allowing Him to make you become all that He's created you to be? Do you have a day, a time, a place where you have given your life to Jesus and accepted who He is in your life? Do you have a day where you have repented of your past, which will always try to hold you back, received His forgiveness that He offers to you when you come to Him with a repentant heart? And have you called upon Him to be Lord into your future? You're like, oh, well, I'm going to wait till next week, or I'm going to wait till tomorrow to do that, or I'm going to wait till later this afternoon. You're not promised any of those things. So if you don't have a day, a time, a place where you have given Jesus your life and allowed yourself to sit at the table that you've been invited to sit at and taking your rightful position as a son or a daughter, why not today? Why not do that today? So I'm going to ask you to do something really brave. If you don't have that day, that time, or that place that you've received Him, I'm going to ask you to slip your hand up to heaven and say, God, that's me. Why? Because it is a public thing, and we want to celebrate with you, and we want to pray with you and encourage you and empower you for the decision that you're making. Anyone at all today? Okay, so here it is. Amen. Amen, brother. Come on, man. Hey, listen, do me a favor, stand up, there's a guy right there, you see him right there, his name's Bruce, you see Bruce? Bruce is going to pray with you, okay, you're going to run out, you can take Clayton with you, Clayton can go ahead, Clayton, go with your boy.